Welcome to the Inside Slant Podcast, brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com.
Jay, that makes 14 straight Big 12 conference titles for Bill Self. Just how big is this?
Well, for starters, it has never been done in the history of college basketball.
Bringing you all of the KU Jayhawk scoop, straight from the players, coaches, and recruits.
JK, I understand you've got some breaking news for us?
I do. I've just learned that Les Miles and his staff have landed another big recruit.
For all of the latest news, analysis, and discussion, go online to JayhawkSlant.com. Now, here's the staff from Jayhawk Slant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the Inside Slant Podcast. And this time we have the full crew together. We're going to talk about basketball from the allegations that were just announced earlier this week for the Kansas Jayhawks men's program to a lot of news from the recruiting trail and how those two things are now connected. We'll look at the TCU game, and football recruiting junkies are going to want to hear what our man, Rivals recruiting analyst and special guest Sam Spiegelman says in his interview with John Kirby. Speaking of John Kirby, I want to welcome Shea Wildebor first, because it seems like it has been forever since we've heard from Shea. Shea, man, how's that vacation been for you?
I'm back in the rotation, baby.
How have you been, man?
I've been good, man. I've been living life. Tomorrow, the Oregon Trail Tigers Kemper plays his first home football game starting center. So I've been getting a little dad duties in, and yeah, but I'm back in the rotation, man. It feels good to be back. Talk some hoops. You know, we got late night coming up, and football's going. Everybody's excited about that, so I'm glad to be. I thought you guys were trying to get rid of me, so it feels good to be back in the mix here a little bit.
It is good to have you back. Having three voices for this thing, I think, always makes it just a little better, a little more fun. Speaking of that third voice, Kirby, I know you're in here somewhere. How you doing, man?
Good, Randy. How you doing, man?
It's been an interesting couple days. Like I was telling you earlier, our air conditioner at the house broke, and even though temperatures have kind of come down a little bit over the last few days, it is, it's 80 in my house, and I think it's 75 on my back porch, so that's literally not cool. But other than that, you know, things are good. There is, you know, we never have a shortage of things to talk about, of subject matter and things like that when we put together an episode of the Inside Slant. But this may be maybe the most eventful, news-filled episode that we've had so far.
Not a super positive one on that end.
No. Yeah, this is not the kind of thing that you're excited about when it happens. I mean, Shay, I know John's obviously been covering KU football for a really long time. He's seen this kind of stuff. I know you've been around basketball for a long time. This is, it's almost like we've been waiting for this so long that when we heard about the list of allegations from the NCAA on Monday, it was like we'd been waiting for so long for the shoe to drop that I almost wasn't surprised. It was just kind of that's almost what I expected, to be quite honest. Did you guys feel that way at all?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it the other day. You know, since Coach Self got here, there's only been one other guy that's covered the beat longer than I have, full time. I mean, guys like Blair Kirkhoff and Vahe Vigorigan, have been around a little bit longer, but they don't cover it full time. So this is a new for me. This is a new experience. I've never really experienced anything like this before. And it's crazy. All the attention that this has received, and rightfully so, good or bad, right or wrong. I mean, it's Kansas basketball we're talking about. It's just been crazy. I mean, from, you know, family and friends texting, from people on the board, hey, what's going to happen? You know, what's the move? What's going to happen? What's the end game here? And you guys, to be honest with you, I have no idea. Here's what I do know, and we can talk about this on the boards all we want to, but I think it gives the people listening a better perspective when they hear our voices. And you guys, this is serious. I mean, this is a big deal here. You've got five level one violations, and you know, I've heard people talk about, like, You know, Self possibly being removed or a 2-year ban, scholarship reduction. And at the end of the day, you guys, I have no idea what to expect. I would be crazy to not think that something is going to happen. What that happen is, I have no idea. But clearly, I mean, this is a new kind of area for me. I've never been through it. So it's interesting to kind of see everybody's takes. It's been interesting to see. And even for me, you guys, I don't know if you've noticed this, but like beat writers from other schools that have posted about it or talked about it. I mean, this thing has taken it's front and center. It's just, you know, I think there's some people that want to see Kansas go down, and there's some people that, you know, have probably been waiting for this to happen for a long time. But for me, it's all new, and I'm covered as best as I can, but also kind of take a step back and, you know, see how everything plays out. But it's been different. I'll say that for sure.
Well, Shay, I can jump in and just, you know, give you my take. I've always let you run with the basketball and help you out when I can. And, you know, over the years, you know, this is my 21st year covering it, and I've got a chance to know people on the inside of the NCAA, people who used to work at the NCAA, just in all the coaching searches that I've covered and people I've been introduced to over time. I get a chance to talk to some guys who understand the game. And first of all, I can tell you this. I've talked to some guys who know what's going on, and they tell me nobody knows what will happen in this. There is no way to predict because, number one, Kansas is going to fight this. Kansas is going to take the fight to the NCAA. And these notice of allegations came out on Monday, and two hours later, there was a release out with comments from Jeff Long, Doug Girard, Bill Self. Bill Self's attorneys, I know, emailed you, Shay, an email with their statement. And the bottom line is, Kansas is going to fight this. And I'm not saying the NCAA isn't good at a fight, but I don't know if the NCAA likes the fight that takes it to the end. And I mean, if you go back and look at time and some of the things going back to North Carolina, Penn State, some of the times where they've been sued, and I'm not going far enough to say Kansas is going to sue, but I think Kansas, when the time comes and if that fight gets to be at that stage, Kansas has their gloves on and they're ready to go 15 rounds in this thing. And when that usually happens, the school that wants to fight and yells and takes it to that extreme, I mean, the NCAA, I'm not saying they back down, but they certainly are all ears when it gets to that point. So I really think this is going to be interesting because when you look at this, and I've talked to people who are involved in college athletics about this in the last 48 hours, when this happens, 95% of the schools, they sit back and they say, okay, tell us what's going to happen. Okay, can we talk about this? Can we negotiate? Kansas didn't. Kansas said, we are going to fight. We are willing to fight. We are ready to fight. And most schools don't do that to the NCAA. So this is going to be real interesting how this all shakes out here over the next, oh, I don't know, you know, 6 months to a year, because it really could take that long.
Yeah, I know Coach Self hasn't said a lot publicly. I've been able to exchange a few text messages with him. And I know this for sure, like John said, he's armoring up. I mean, he. If anybody thinks that he's just going to walk away from this or turn his back and take the easy way out, that ain't going to happen. And I remember when this first, when a lot of this first came out towards the end of the season, people were thinking that, you know, he might bolt or he's going to do this or that, or how can he work his way through this? He's not going anywhere. I mean, he's armored up and he's ready to fight this. He's ready to take this head on. And I mean, he's not backing down. I mean, if he's guilty, or if anybody, they've done a really good job of hiding, because he's ready to go with this thing. He's not going to turn his back. He's going to fight and see it through. And I'm anxious to see how it all turns out.
Well, you guys have both talked about this and described it like a heavyweight fight, and I'm gonna kind of go with that for a minute. I think we need to lay out exactly the tail of the tape here. I know we talked about the 5 level 1 violations in basketball, which some people may know, they may not be aware of that. There's also an additional 2 level 2 violations in football. And maybe the most critical of all the things that were listed in the notice of allegations, the NCAA cited a lack of institutional control within the University of Kansas Athletic Department. that is how, you know what? You guys are the experts. You tell me. I know I have my opinion on it, but John, how big is that last piece? How big is that citation of a lack of institutional control?
Well, Randy, it's the biggest of them all. I mean, you know, you don't, I mean, when they feel that you have gone past that threshold and there's no coming back, that's what you get hit with, you know. But I still go back to some things, talking to some people who have been involved in this, and these guys know their stuff. Hey, listen, I'm not smart enough, okay? That's why I go to people who are a lot smarter than me and ask them, what's your take on this? What do you think about this? You know, I had some guys read through the 20-page notice of allegations, and, you know, one of the things guys kept coming back to me was, there's nothing new. There's nothing different, and there's nothing in this that wasn't said back in the trial in New York. So, I mean, you know, just listen to some of these guys who are attorneys, people who know the NCAA. It's interesting to hear them that say there is no smoking gun. There is no big deal that we haven't already heard. And, you know, the original findings were that KU, they thought, was defrauded, or Kansas was the victim. So, you know, again, this thing's going to take a lot of turns and a lot of twists over this over time here. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
And here's the thing, Randy, too. They talk, I know two players that have been talked about are Billy Preston and Silvio De Souza. Billy Preston never played a minute of basketball at Kansas.
Exactly.
Never played 1 minute. KU held him out. I mean, never played a minute. Well, and then you've got a guy.
As soon as they found out there could be a problem, they said he's not participating.
Absolutely. And then you've got Silvio, who graduated early, arrived on campus, was cleared by the NCAA once, sat out all of last year, and was then cleared again. And I don't mean to get worked up about it, but I mean, Billy never played a minute. Not 1 minute did he play.
Well, guys,
and
we
Silvio,
might.
Well, Shay, by the NCAA standards, has been cleared twice.
Well, hold on. But I want to go back to some things that are, I think, a key here. Number one is this TJ Gasanola from Adidas, okay? Number one, they're trying to claim him as a booster. And
how does that work? How can you claim a guy that works for an international sports apparel conglomerate as a booster of a basketball program when he has connections and relationships with every Adidas program in the country? How is he a booster of Kansas?
But Jeff Long also said, hypothetically, in order for us to get Silvio cleared, we had to do this, correct?
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he said, hypothetically, this is what they told us to do, so we did it. I mean, that's if they're telling you to do something in order to get a kid cleared, then, I mean,
that, wow.
Well, guys,
I went back and watched the video because I was there, and I went back to make sure I understood the video correctly. And Jeff Long said hypothetically.
Well, hold on here. Let me tell you this, and this is what attorneys have told me, sports attorneys, people familiar with the NCAA. This is probably the biggest piece in all this. This is new territory for the NCAA. Okay, This Gasanola is a booster. This is the term capricious. We've been seeing this a lot. Heck, I had to have a guy explain it to me. Hey, what is capricious? I had no idea. I'm going, what does that mean? Okay.
What does it mean?
Well, that is a 25-cent word right there.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you this. This comes straight from an attorney. He explained it to me like this, and I went, okay, I get it now. He said, it would be like your kid allowed to always get in the cookie jar and grab two cookies. And then one day, he gets in and grabs three, and you come up and just spank him. And he looks at you like, wow, where did that come from? And it's like a changing of the rule. It's like something new that comes in out of nowhere. It's something different that hasn't been done before. So that's what I think a lot of this is going to come down to is the whole Gasanola piece and all this. So, you know, hey, listen, we can sit here and we can talk about it. I know it's interesting. And again, the thing to take from this is Kansas has a fight. There's no doubt they
Absolutely.
Do. They know they have a fight, okay? And they're going to fight. But they've also got to defend themselves because this stuff is still pretty serious.
Well, I think it's important for us, you know, because there are obviously a lot of Kansas fans listening to this podcast that check in with us, that follow everything that we publish on the message boards, the content that we generate, everything that comes through the slant, that are very worried And some of those people, I'm sure, some of those Kansas fans think that this is the end of the world. But that's it's not going to be that. I mean, there are going to be consequences. There are going to be repercussions for this. But I mean, it's not going to be. We're not getting the SMU death penalty, right? I mean, it's just that's not going to happen. Fans that are worried about how big this thing could get and how bad it could be, I think they've got to step back and be realistic a little bit. I mean, you look at the North Carolina situation, and I know that's you're not necessarily going apples to apples there, but I look at that and I'm like, okay, if they were able to skate like they did on a situation like that, with questionable academic work and things like that happening with classes that could have been bogus or whatever was really going on there with Coach Williams and those kids, I mean, you're talking about academic fraud versus two kids that, again, were alleged, you know, had questions about eligibility, didn't, you know, one of them never played a minute. The other one came on campus, got there, was declared eligible, then was ineligible, and was then declared that he was okay to go again. I mean, what else? How can you be punished for that when Carolina skated like they did? I mean, I don't know what to make of it.
Keep in mind, too, okay, this is an FBI case where they've got guys on wiretap, they have text messages, they have legit proof that this stuff was going down, okay? And I really believe at some point the NCAA has to try to put their foot down. And what they're trying to do is here, they're trying to put their foot down with the big dog. And the big dog is Kansas. Let's face it, Kansas is one of the elite. They're one of the blue bloods. And if the NCAA can come in and kind of flex their muscle and come in and throw these type of allegations and start talking about lack of institutional control, and they're talking about the University of Kansas basketball program, which is one of the most known in America. They're also Yes. sending a message to everybody else that if they're doing this to Kansas, they can come do it to you too. Because Kansas is at that peak. They're at the upper echelon of all college basketball in America. So I think it's also a little bit of sending a message as well.
For sure.
Well, I think obviously we're not going to solve this thing, and as we've talked about this off the air before we even got started with this, that everybody is going to have an opinion on how this is going to go, as to who knew what and how this is going to move forward. But in the end, nobody knows how this whole thing is going to play out. It's going to be likely a long, in-depth process that's going to take quite a long time. We'll have plenty of time to talk about exactly what is going to happen with the NCAA. Shay, I want to kind of transition now to the recruiting side. And I'm curious, what effects have you seen already since the notice of allegations came down earlier this week? And what could be the overall impact on recruiting for the Kansas men basketball program in light of these allegations from the NCAA?
Well, here's the deal, Randy. I'm of the opinion, and I think most people would agree, that the staff has known this was coming for a while. And, you know, despite all of that, they have been on the road recruiting like I've never seen before. I mean, I believe that at least maybe Bill Self in his mind feels that he has something to prove. He's got a loaded team. He's going to be missing some guys who are going to be leaving next year. So, I mean, like this month alone, they checked on guys like Bryce Thompson, Caleb Love, who incidentally cut Kansas today from his list. It's down in Missouri, North Carolina. Dawson Garcia, guys like Moses Moody, JT Thor, I'm sorry, K.K. Robinson, Kerwin Walton, Jethro Muscadin, Davian Bradford, Kennedy Chandler, Harrison Ingram, Javonte Brown, just to name a few. So, I mean, right now, it's business as usual. You know, no one's come out said, hey, I'm cutting Kansas because of this. You know, they've got guys lined up for late night. It'll be another big event. You know, so right now, there's been no setbacks, no repercussions, nothing of that nature. But what I'm ready to see, or interested to see, Randy, is what happens when the early signing period rolls around, or, you know, if guys wait to sign late, what happens? Then you'll know. I think Caleb Love, who again eliminated Kansas today, was always leaning towards Carolina. Now Missouri's made a late run, so I don't think that has anything to do with what was announced earlier in the week. But, I mean, you know, right now the staff has been about as aggressive on the recruiting trail as I can remember in recent memory, and they're going at it like they expect to sign some dogs.
You know, with late night obviously just around the corner, tell us, who are you expecting to see in Allen Fieldhouse?
If my list is correct, you're going to have JT Thor, Javonte Brown-Ferguson, who's a 2021 kid, Mariel Matting, who was they just offered a JUCO kid from out at Chipola Junior College, Bryce Thompson, everybody knows, five-star guard from Oklahoma, Davian Bradford, who is down the street in St. Louis, Kennedy Chandler, another 2021 kid, Grady Dick, who's also down the street in Wichita, K.K. Robinson, and then you'll have a couple 2021 kids, Harrison Ingram, Kendall Brown, Mark Mitchell, and then Trey White, who is also verbally committed to Kansas in that class, who, again, verbally committed, has no plans to back out, is very high on Kansas, loves his commitment, loves the coaching staff. So, you know, they have got a huge crop of prospects coming in for late night in the fog, and I seriously expect that list to grow as we get closer. A week from Friday night, I believe.
Do you think there's any chance that maybe, I know you say you expect that list to grow, do you think there are any guys that maybe back off just because they're like, you know what, I with everything that's hanging over that place, I don't even want to go. Do you think there's any chance of that?
God, it's hard to, no, I mean, right now, as we're doing this podcast, I would say no, but you never know. I mean, if a guy, I don't know, it's coming from out of town that thinks that something's going to happen down the road and it's not for him, possibly. I mean, you know, again, I don't think we'll really know anything, Randy, until really the signing period's over. Here's the thing. Here's what's going to happen in my mind. Either some guys are going to either some guys are going to hear what Coach Self has to say and sign on, whether it be a Bryce Thompson, a kid that they've been on forever, a JT Thor, you know, the kid out in Chipola, Mariel Matting, one of those guys, they're going to jump on, sign on. Or what's going to happen is these guys are going to sign elsewhere. You know, that list is going to kind of get shortened up a little bit. And then Coach is going to have to make a decision, you know, go the junior college route, you know, look for grad transfers, or maybe kind of jump in late on some prospects that they haven't been on, that they aren't on now. So I think it's going to be a while before you see anything. I don't think any guys are going to come out and just say, hey, I'm done with Kansas, I'm going to look elsewhere. So I don't think you're going to see anything happen like that anytime soon. I just don't see it happening.
Shay, I'm just going to step back and let you take the mic. I want you to talk about who you think the top realistic targets are in the next class and how many you expect this staff to sign when the dust settles.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I'll just give you the guys that I think that they'll target. I mean, obviously, Isaiah Todd, the five-star power forward who said he's going to visit Kansas, told me he's going to visit. You know, Bill Self has been out there for a visit, visit, 10th-ranked player in the class. I mean, there's a Jalen Suggs, point guard from out in Minneapolis, Minnesota, 11th-ranked player in the class. Then you go to Bryce Thompson, another five-star, 19th-ranked player in the class. You got a Josh Hall from out of North Carolina, small forward, the 25th-ranked player in the class. You know, you've got a Kyrie Walker from Phoenix, Arizona, who could reclassify to 2019, and if he does that, he maintains Kansas as an option. Obviously, with Isaac McBride leaving, you have an open spot, so that's something to follow. You know, you've got Adam Miller from out of Morgan Park, Chicago, Illinois, who's on Kansas's list. He hasn't scheduled a visit yet. You know, I think he was kind of waiting to see what was going on with some of the other guards in the class. And so I think that's a name to keep an eye on. Now, Dawson Garcia, who's one of the top power forwards in the class, has been a priority for this staff for a long, long time. I mean, he's from Savage, Minnesota. That's one to keep an eye on. I mean, if he schedules a visit, which he may have right now, I haven't been able to get a hold of him. I know the staff was out to see him last week, a guy that they really, 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 really like. You know, JT Thor is another guy they've been on for a long time. Bill was out in Atlanta last week. Did an in-home visit. You know, Moses Moody's another guy from out in Florida that they've gone to see, who could potentially visit. So those are some of the guys right now. And here's the thing. If those guys start signing elsewhere or start committing elsewhere, you're going to see guys that aren't on the radar right now pop up. Again, like I mentioned earlier, you could see junior college guys, you know, guys that enter the transfer portal, and really players that we've never heard of up to this point. So, again, it's an interesting development. You know, I would assume, I don't know this for sure, that, you know, a guy like Bryce Thompson is probably going to decide early. He'll have all of his visits set up. I know in talking to his dad on a number of occasions, you know, they want to get this thing done, wrap it up, and not string anybody along. So that's going to be an interesting one to follow. Same with Isaiah Todd. I mean, he's on the visit tour now, and, you know, a lot of people seem to believe with everything going on with maybe Kansas and Arizona that maybe, you know, North Carolina's in there and going to get that done. So there's just, you know, it's just one of those things where people want answers right away. They want that instant gratification, but it's not going to happen. It's just not. I mean, until I think there's the picture's a little bit more clear. And here's another thing. We hear stuff every day. We, you know, get emails from the attorneys, and we hear what the national media is writing and things. But obviously, Coach Self and his staff are telling these guys something different. I mean, they're privy to information that we're not. So a guy like Bryce Thompson probably has a little bit better idea of what's going on or where things stand than we do. I don't know that for sure, but that's just my feeling on it. I mean, I'm sure he's been in close contact with Coach. I'm sure his dad has as well. So I'm sure those guys at least, to some degree, have a little bit better understanding or feeling of, you know, what the situation is, what could potentially happen, and you know, where things stand. So it's just something. It's unfortunate, but you're just gonna have to be patient and kind of see what happens.
Shay, I'm gonna throw you a little bit of a curve. One last question here, and then we're gonna move on to football stuff with Kirby. I've seen a few people put this question on Twitter. I've seen it on Facebook. I've had friends ask me this. And I know you've gotten this before, too. There have been a lot of people that have bemoaned and wrung their hands over recruiting one-and-done athletes that have said, well, maybe this will finally get them away from recruiting one-and-done athletes and get them back to the four-year type players that they seem to romanticize when they think about Kansas basketball. Overall, do you think talent is going to dip with this program? Are they going to take a step back in the Big 12? What do you think, just point blank, what do you think the impact of this could be?
Oh, man. Here's the thing. I got a couple of things. I think eventually that the one and done rule is going to be gone, where they just jump right from high school to the pros.
As they should be able to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. Here's another thing, though. I think a lot of kids are going to entertain overseas. You know, you've seen LaMelo Ball have extremely – I mean, LaMelo Ball as a kid, you know, I was really critical of him and was kind of – I don't know what to say. I just wasn't a big fan of his. And seeing how he's matured, seeing how he's playing now, I read some NBA exec anonymous saying he's in the running for a top number one overall pick. So I think kids are going to look at his success. I think kids are going to look at what RJ Hampton does. He signed on for some scratch. I mean, this is a kid that's got some money now and he's got some endorsements. So I think a lot depends on what happens. I don't know how Kansas can't. I mean, it's just one of those things where, listen, had this all not unfolded the way it did, I'm of the firm belief that Matthew Hurt and Cashon Stanley would be at Kansas right now. I believe that.
Oh,
I think
now
Jeremiah Robinson Earl, I think he just wanted to blaze his own trail. I think he wanted to do his own thing.
Yes,
I get that. I understand it. And that's okay. I mean, that as you know, he put himself in the position he was in because of his hard work, and he had every right to do what he did. But when I start talking with people and I'm kind of looking at this situation more, had none of this happened, I believe without question that Matthew Hurt and Cassius Stanley would have been at Kansas. Now, listen, people can say, well, that's whatever, dude. I mean, but listen, if you go back and look at it, Duke didn't get involved with Cassius until very, very, very late. Like, very late. Like, he was done. His list was set. He was done taking visits. Everything was done. And then all of a sudden, you know, Duke got Matthew Hurt, and, you know, they brought Cassius in for a visit. He opened up his list. And so I don't know how it came. I mean, any negative publicity is bad publicity. I mean, I'm sure there's coaches on the recruiting trail now saying, why do you want to go to Kansas? Oh, I mean, look at all the stuff going on. You got the bottom line ticker. You got Wetzel and 40 and all those. I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And none of it is really as good.
With that in mind, does it become harder to keep kids or to get kids to commit?
I can't see kid. I can't see. First of all, you know what? If I really wish I knew what was going to happen, because I could speak on this a little bit easier. But knowing that, I don't know. I mean, I think
and
the
I'm
kids.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't keep hitting you with questions.
No. It's fine. I mean, the bottom line is Randy. I think anytime you have a situation like this, you have to take a step back and look at it. You do. If you're a Bryce Thompson or a Jalen Suggs or a Kemper Wildebor or a John Kerr, anybody. If you're a high-level athlete, you got to take a step back and you have to look at it. You have to see what's going to play out. I mean, I think you have to, don't you? I mean, if there's going to – and let's just be hypothetical. Let's say they come back and Kansas gets hit with a one-year postseason ban. I mean, if you're a potentially one-and-done kid or a two-and-done, do you want – I mean, is that something – are you willing to sacrifice that? Now, I know the kid that transferred from I'm going to mess this up, Clemson, Kelly Bryant, who went to Missouri, he was willing to do that for a year, the quarterback.
Yes.
And so far, I mean, I think it's played out pretty well for him, aside from the one – some kids may be willing to do that. But to me, you know, March Madness, everything that comes with that, the camaraderie, the brotherhood, the just everything about that. I mean, to me, that it's just different. And so it's a kind of a, I don't know, event that a lot of kids might not want to sacrifice, but other kids might be like, hey, it's Kansas. You know, I'm going to go there. I'm going to do my thing and see what happens. So I don't know, man. I just, it's difficult to talk about because there are so many unknowns. We can talk in hypotheticals and opinions, and that's what I'm doing now. Hell, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen. So the only thing I can do is just take a step back and let me say this to be fair. If this was my son being recruited and the school was going through this, I would at least say, hey, let's wait, let's see what happens, let's take a step back and just kind of evaluate everything. And I'm sure there's a lot of parents right now doing that.
That is the final word from Shay Wildebor. Shay, that was phenomenal. I appreciate you getting on here with us after a bit of a hiatus, a little vacation for you, to recap everything, the ramifications of where things are with this list of allegations, as well as, you know, what's happening with recruiting, and kind of start gearing people up for late night and the start of men's basketball season. We will talk with you again soon, sir. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Have a good night, guys. Thank you.
Kirby, now we're going to shift gears and get into football. Obviously, a lot to digest there after the notice of allegations. But, you know, the Jayhawks are coming off a loss, a tough one to West Virginia on Saturday. But, my gosh, that was a heck of an entertaining football game. I mean, it was a loss, but and I know there are no moral victories in sports or in football or anything like that, but there was a lot of really great things that you saw in that game that we haven't seen from a Kansas program in quite some time.
Well, Randy, I'll start with this. You know, when that clock ticked down and that the lateral came up about 15 yards short, you know, from the Kansas side, as I'm sitting in the press box and I'm thinking to myself, that what a blown opportunity. Okay, I'm thinking this was a game that they could have won, they should have won, and you sit here and you go, how many more chances will they have to win Big 12 games? And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, you know, this is one you needed. You had to have this. And the next day I was talking to a good friend of mine, and I was telling him, I said, hey, listen, that was a blown opportunity, and, you know, those are games you got to win. And he goes, you know, Kirby, you're the guy who always preaches that you watched Mason's teams and Mangino's teams improve without wins. He goes, you're the guy that's preached to your whole Jayhawk slant community, and you get on sports radio 10 over the years. And he goes, you're the guy who says teams can get better, and you've watched it without winning football games. They can show progress. And I went, you know what? You're right. You're totally right. So, you know, I did a 180 because I was sitting there thinking, hey, forget moral victories. Forget improvement. You've got to win that game. And this guy kind of brought me back down to earth and said, this is what you've been preaching over all these years. You've watched a lot of KU football, and this is what you tell everybody. So you know what? He's right. He's 100% right. So, you know, it was the offense never got in the groove against West Virginia. For whatever reason, West Virginia did a nice job of bottling up Khalil Herbert. They were doing a lot of run blitzing. You know, the defense played well for the most part. You know, I worry about Drew Prox and if he's going to be injured and going to be able to play, because I think he's probably hands down, not even close, the best linebacker out there. You know,
he has been superb this year.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, Kyle Thompson at punter for the first time, he actually showed that he's not Superman. You know, he had a couple punts that didn't go right. But the kids played with a ton of effort. They never quit. So, you know, it is a tough loss. And it's one of those games where you're thinking, get over the hump. Find a way to win it. You're 3-1. You're kind of ahead of a schedule where people thought you were going to be. But, hey, bottom line, it is. But I think you'll look back on this thing, like I was told that I always tell everybody, you'll look back on this game and realize that, hey, maybe it wasn't that big of a deal not to pull off of a win.
Do you think that the offense started out a little tight and you know, not just tight from the standpoint of, you know, hey, maybe they were a little nervous or whatever, but just the fact that the formations, we went back to those football in a phone booth type lineups that we had seen earlier in the season that we seem to have really gotten away from against Boston College. Did you notice that? Was that kind of your take on the way they were lining up at least early on?
Yeah, I do think it was. I think that they were bunched in a little bit more than they were against Boston College. I didn't see as many four receiver looks, as not as much spread formation in that first half. Now in the second half that changed, but I thought early on you maybe had some more similarities to some of the Indiana State and Coastal formations, you know, and then West Virginia was doing a nice job. I mean, Kansas was running a lot on first and second down. West Virginia was coming with a lot of run blitzes. I mean, I haven't gone over the exact stats on third down, but I can tell you this, man, every time I looked up at the scoreboard and Kansas was in third down, I can't tell you how many times it was 3rd and 7, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7. It seemed like that a lot of the game that was going on. So I thought in the second half, they went out and opened it up. So I don't know at the half if they went in and they said, listen, let's get back, let's spread this thing out a little more, and they started putting more points on the board and they had more, you know, more offensive output. But there's no doubt, I thought it was a little conservative early on.
The team walked off the field after, obviously, a result they had to be disappointed in, because, I mean, not only were they, I mean, it wasn't just close. They literally had a chance to win on the last play of the game. They fell short, yet they walked off the field to a standing ovation in the booth in Memorial Stadium. You've been covering Kansas football for a long time, as we seemingly, I swear, it seems like we say that every 5 minutes on this podcast. What did you think of that? Have you seen that many times before in a losing effort?
No, I don't. Hey, listen, I don't know if I've ever seen it. And I can tell you, I can recall exactly how it went down, because I was in the press box till the very end of the game. Okay. You know how it goes up there. You try to get a head start heading downstairs, because you've got to beat the elevators. You've got to beat the people in the stairwell. You've got to get down there, because if the coach has a quick, you know, post game with the team, he's in the press room, and you've got to be ready to go. You got to have all your equipment set up. So I stayed there, and I'm packing up, I'm shoving stuff in the bags, ready to get downstairs, and all of a sudden I hear all this cheering. And I kind of look up thinking, what are they cheering for? And as I look up and I looked out the press box, here comes a team off the field, and everybody on the west side is standing up, giving them a standing ovation. And I was just like, wow, you know, That was pretty cool to see. So I've never seen anything like that. You know, it was a great environment. It was one of the best KU home football environments I've seen in a long time. And the kids did play hard. So listen, hey, they deserve the ovation from the crowd. And obviously, a lot of people like what they saw, that kids were lined up, they were in the right position, and they took a Big 12 opponent to the very end of the game. And although they didn't win, obviously, there was a lot of Kansas fans showing that they were pleased with what they saw.
What was the mood like with those kids after the game? I mean, when they obviously, I mean, they took that standing ovation as they jogged off the field there. I mean, what did they have to say about the response and the support that they got from the crowd?
Yeah, I talked to him about that. You know, they said they had never seen that, where they got the standing ovation. Carter Stanley joked, I was sitting there right there with him, and, you know, at one point, I think it was the fourth quarter maybe, he had to hush the crowd, you know, where the quarterback puts his hands up and is like, quiet, quiet, quiet. And, yeah. And you know, Carter Stanley, somebody said, have you ever had to do that? And Carter's like, not Memorial Stadium, I haven't. So, you know, it was funny just hearing their reactions. But at the same time, you know, I said this, after that Coastal Carolina loss, those kids were down. They really were. And you know what? It was pretty close to the same thing against West Virginia, because those kids want to win so bad, and they want to get over that hump, and they were coming off that Boston College win, and they did. They played hard against West Virginia. They left everything out there, and I felt a little bit of the same sense that I felt after Coastal Carolina, that they were really disappointed they couldn't find a way to get out of there with a win.
You know, John, there have been three home games, and obviously there have been a lot of recruiting visitors, and a number of them that have been there on several occasions. I know you've talked to a lot of those kids. What has the response been like from recruits, both kids that are regional or national, as well as kids from right here in, you know, Kansas City and Kansas and Missouri, about what they're seeing on the field from Les Miles and the program under his first year?
Yeah, Randy, the response has been really positive. You know, I've heard a lot of recruits talk about, especially this last game, Krishan Brown and Keon Parker. They're both teammates from Booker T. Washington. Krishan Brown's a linebacker. He's already committed. Parker is a kid racking up a lot of offers. He's a 2021 cornerback. They're buddies. He went up. Parker went up with Brown to the game. They love the atmosphere. They both talked about how much they liked it. I went back and talked to Jalen Richardson, Luke Grimm, another interesting name, Jared Casey. He's a fullback from Plainville, Kansas, and it seems like the staff is all over him. I don't know if they're going to try to, you know, get him to be a preferred walk-on or not, but, you know, it seems like they've been putting a lot of recruiting effort into him. And when you talk to these guys, you hear a couple things. Number one, you hear they think that they see the improvement. Recruits see that Kansas, through, you know, through these games that we've seen, they have seen improvement. And against West Virginia, they talked about the atmosphere and the crowd, and they were all really impressed with the energy that they saw in the stadium. And, hey, listen, we've been covering this a while, and I don't know when the last time I've seen a KU crowd like that was, but it's definitely been several years. So the recruits really noticed that, and they've mentioned it to me.
Speaking of recruiting, we've got a really great feature coming right now. I'm going to send it over to Kirby, who has on the studio line Sam Spiegelman, who has some great scoop on a couple of KU targets from down in the booth. John, take it away.
We are joined by Sam Spiegelman, who covers recruiting for Rivals.com and handles the Louisiana and Texas areas, which everyone knows are key spots for the Kansas staff. Sam, how you doing?
Staying alive, man, just day to day, and there's never a shortage of news that needs to be talked about, and Kansas is tied into a lot of it, so I appreciate you for having me on.
Hey, you bet. You know, you got everybody's attention on Tuesday morning with the news that you posted of a couple recruits in Louisiana. Let's start with Pat Jenkins, a defensive tackle who just decommitted from LSU. What can you tell us about him, and, you know, how are the Jayhawks a player with him?
Yeah, this was really a bit unexpected. You know, the way that Pat's recruitment kind of shaped out is, as soon as he got the LSU offer, you know, for most kids in New Orleans, live an hour outside of campus, usually, you know, he jumped on that offer within 2 weeks, and you thought his recruitment was wrapped up at that point. I know that he was really close to committing to TCU right before he committed to LSU. He had been on an official visit, and there have been some rumblings leading into his week three contest that maybe he wasn't as solid as the world had perceived him to be. So I went out to Erin on Monday, got a chance to catch up with him. Talking to people first closely around him before even talking to him, it just seemed like in terms of fit, you know, LSU, they kind of pride themselves on almost being like a like an NFL sort of atmosphere in Baton Rouge. And Pat is a really smart kid. He's an honors student, and I think he was looking for something to challenge him a little bit more academically, but also have the same football side of things. And the new schools, it seems like LSU is completely out of it from what I understand or whatever I gathered. The new schools he was quick to mention off included Kansas as well as TCU, A&M, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Colorado, and also Tulane. And believe it or not, I think that every single one of those schools to a degree is involved. And that includes a school like Tulane, which is obviously, you know, 5 minutes away from Jenkins' house. And it's one of those, you know, rigorous academic schools. But in talking about Kansas with him specifically, obviously Quan Drake has ties to Louisiana, got ties to LSU, he's got ties with Les Miles, and he has a fantastic relationship with Pat. They have been in touch even before Pat backed off his commitment to LSU, and it's only kind of surged ever since. I'm expecting Pat to be in Lawrence at some point this fall. I expect Pat to make a decision, not necessarily in the near future. I think it's going to go to maybe October, November. Maybe he might even play this out to the early signing period. But Kansas was a spot that he said that he had to visit at some point before he makes his mind up. And it's one of the relationships with not only Quan Drake, but Les Miles, and obviously Coach Hull before that recruiting him, that those relationships are there, that Kansas is going to be in the mix moving forward.
You know, I want to move on to another name that you also brought up on Tuesday, and the Kansas fans have been following Ashad Clayton for some time. I mean, Ashad Clayton is like the name. It's the name that comes up with everybody all the time. Everybody wants to know how he's doing. And then obviously your update, you know, gave Kansas fans a little bit of a boost they needed on Tuesday after receiving the notice of allegations in basketball on Monday. I think you provided the bright spot to everybody. Just talk about Ashad and what's the latest you have on him.
Yeah, and I know the Kansas fans have been excited for him for, when I was sat down with Ashad last week, it felt like for 4 years and all the twists and turns that have been going on with his recruitment during that span. And we're kind of hitting that, the fourth quarter, you know, the final stretch of this recruitment. And I still think there's still a lot that needs to play out. So let me, you know, caution everyone with that. I've always believed Kansas to be a player. Like, they will always have a hat on the table with Ashad Clayton because Tony Hull recruited him to Warren Easton. And because Tony Hull has done a fantastic job since the time Ashad was a freshman at Warren Easton, recruiting him, recruiting teammates, and having some success. And then the addition of Les Miles, this is the same Les Miles that Ashad Clayton watched at LSU growing up and has, undoubted admiration for. This is when Les Miles took the job. I believe it was, I can't remember at the point when I interviewed Ashad about Kansas, but he talked about just how deep his relationship was with Les Miles, how Les Miles took a personal touch in his recruitment with his mother, who is an integral figure in this decision-making process. Now let's fast forward, you know, through the ebbs and flows of his recruitment. Ashad has been a public LSU lean for his sophomore and junior years. LSU has cooled on him in the spring. Ashad underwent a very minor knee procedure, and from what I've seen the first few weeks of his season, I should be at least tentatively planning to see him again Friday live. But in watching his practice last week, he looks absolutely the same running back before and after the injury, and that's going to come into play here. Trust me. He's because, you know, some schools like LSU cooled on him after the procedure and were taking a more modest approach in pushing for him. That allows Georgia and Kansas to emerge to the top for Ashad. Kansas has been that player that's been there the whole time. The relationships are deep. He knows what he gets in going to Kansas. And the Les Miles factor, he knows that they are not a guaranteed Big 12 bottom seller anymore. He likes the physical approach. I mean, you talk about kids liking, you know, the Oklahoma or LSU offense because they're opening up. Ashad likes the idea that Les is going to pound the rock. So he's going to continue to attract offensive linemen and the running backs behind them. So Ashad, obviously a huge fan who knows Puka Williams, has ties with Corion Harris and Mike Lee. All of that plays into Kansas's favor, and I think that as of right now, that's the caution right here. If he had to commit today, it would be to Kansas. You cannot rule out Georgia. Georgia, however, is recruiting Clayton. They're also recruiting Zach Evans, the number one running back in the country. E.J. Smith, they had him on campus for an official visit. And they also had Cartavius Bigsby, who's currently an Auburn commit from Georgia, on campus for this Notre Dame game last weekend. So Georgia is looking for a second running back to pair with five-star Kendall Milton. And Ashad Clayton is one of several highly touted running backs that are in that discussion. And I put this in the article, and I have to bring it up again here. You cannot take Georgia seriously, even though he is talking to Del McGee and Cortez Hankton, the area recruiter, until he makes his way to Athens. Because until he gets there with his mom, with his teammate who's committed to Georgia, you know, no one is going to commit and sign with a school if they have never stepped foot on campus. And he did not make the Arkansas State game, which was the first visit that he had tentatively planned to Athens. But he has also not used an official visit yet. So he can get there as long as he finds that, you know, crack in the schedule. But that has to transpire before I fully believe that he is going to go to Georgia. And I think the same thing applies to Georgia, is sorting through all these backs. They figure out if Ashad is their guy, or are they going to kind of go all in on a Clayton or a Bigsby or an E.J. Smith when it's all said and done. Again, with the injury taking place over the spring and now back to full health and playing, like the Ashad Clayton that we know is a top 100 kid right now, other schools, and when I say other schools, I know that the one that Kansas is very afraid of is LSU. And while LSU has shifted its focus to a lot of other running backs, including a lot of those guys that I just mentioned, like Zach Evans or Trey Bradford from Lancaster, Texas, obviously the school that has a Kansas commit because of Emmett Jones, if LSU begins to push again for Ashad and they can get back on his good side, it's going to become an even more convoluted recruitment to deal with toward the tail end. Obviously, he grew up an LSU fan. Mickey Joseph has maintain that relationship. He's got a great relationship with Joe Brady, the passing game coordinator. Obviously, the staff seems a little bit torn on Ashad, but that's where things stand. So in a nutshell, I think that KU has an edge right now, but you can't sleep on Georgia if they begin to push harder, or LSU if they kind of open the door back up and try to get him back on campus.
Well, Sam, we're going to put an asterisk on that. But I mean, the Kansas fans just hearing the fact that you're even giving them the little bit of the nod right now, I think they're going to take that good news and run with it. And hey, listen, I'll always get you on when you've got some good stuff to give us. You do a great job down there in Texas and Louisiana, and I appreciate you joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me, John. Always appreciate the time, dude.
Great stuff there from Rival Zone Sam Spiegelman, a guy that has become almost a celebrity, really, on the Slant message boards when he drops in a little caveat, a pearl of wisdom here or there about some of the top targets that Tony Hall and now Les Miles have been involved in down in Louisiana and in traditional, really more SEC territory. With that in mind, you know, talking about Ashad Clayton, Kirby, You've seen this program over the years since you've covered it land some big-time running back talent going back to the days of June Henley and LT Levine and James Sims and David Wimbush and Reggie Duncan. I mean, Puka Williams. There have been a lot of good backs that they've been able to land. How big would it be to land Clayton for the Jayhawks?
Well, it would be huge. I mean, he'd be one of the top recruits they've landed in a long time. And, you know, we've joked about it on the message board that there's a couple things in play. Number one, obviously, Tony Hull's done a tremendous job. And Clayton, you know, Hull's the reason that he's at Warren Easton High School. So, you know, there's a tie there, and there's a special connection with Tony Hull. And at the same time, they've needed some breaks. And, you know, Sam Spiegelman's talked about it, and we've heard about it. That, you know, sometimes when you get a kid like him, you need another school to fill up the running backs, or you need another school to say, you know, we want more of a speed back, so we're going to go in a different direction. So I tell people this all the time. I joke, if Ashad Clayton falls, quote unquote, falls to Kansas and happens to fall into their laps, hey, it doesn't matter how you get a kid, okay? It doesn't matter what school could have dropped him or what school decided they weren't going to take another running back or what have you. The fact is that you get him. So if they could land Clayton, that is the one guy who could probably – listen, the class is sitting at, what, 26th, 25th in the nation right now. They've done a great job. But a kid like that, you add him, and then the fan base just takes their excitement to a whole nother notch up. So that would be a huge get if they could get him. But, man, I'm telling you, with kids like that, it changes every day, and there's still going to be a long way to go in the recruiting.
Speaking of long way to go, we are still early, really, maybe a quarter of the way through the regular season at this point. And we've got a game coming up this weekend, this Kansas program does. Let's talk about the TCU game. We know that this program is you know, the TCU is coming off a disappointing loss to Southern Methodist. Gary Patterson, a Kansan, obviously, that a lot of people in our fan base are familiar with. Gary Patterson talked at his press conference about Les Miles and how the Kansas defense always plays tough against the Horned Frogs.
Well, their whole offense, Parchman, I mean, they got good wide receivers. I mean, it's... Oh, they got two tailbacks, to be honest with you. They're good players. You know, Les Miles is a good guy and a good coach. He's a good motivator. I mean, he's won wherever he's gone to, and he's changed programs. So that's, you know, enough said when it comes to all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's defensively, you know, they always seem to play us well. So, you know, we got to get ready to go, find a way to win.
Another interesting topic with TCU in their loss was the fan support that they drew. And here is Gary Patterson talking about the response from the TCU faithful.
Atmosphere after halftime?
To be honest with you, the crowd left at halftime. So I was a little bit, you know, they want us to come back and win, but I was not very happy with the crowd at halftime. I saw a lot of people in red and blue that were down lower than what they should have been. So I asked that question, how they got there.
We're going to take the full breakdown now on TCU and head back over to the studio line as John brings in our next guest, Billy Wessels, who covers TCU football.
Our next guest is Billy Wessels, who covers the TCU football program for our Rivals.com affiliate. Billy, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good today. How about yourself?
Not bad. Hey, what's the weather like down there? I heard it might be hot or something this weekend.
Yeah, you might have heard that, huh? It's still in the low to mid-90s. We don't get fall until October. So it's still good for like 3 weeks away for the 90s.
Well, I'm sure the Kansas players and trainers are getting those guys hydrated. I don't know how they're getting prepared for this one, but you can't duplicate that kind of weather up here right now.
No, it's pretty tough. It's an advantage TCU definitely has. They like to practice outside in the summer, too. They have the brand-new indoor facility about 5 or 6 years ago, but every once in a while they go outside to get a dose of this heat to give them an edge against teams like Kansas or Kansas State or Iowa State that come down. They don't really get this kind of weather all that often.
You know, let's go back to last weekend, Billy. I mean, it was a little bit of a surprise, I'm sure, a disappointing game, you know, for the Horned Frogs to lose to their crosstown rivals on Saturday. You know, what was your take on what happened in that game?
Yeah, the team was really high after an emotional win on the road at Purdue. That was a team that everyone hyped up coming into the year. I know Purdue was awfully banged up, losing their quarterback and linebacker and right guard and defensive tackle and all that stuff. But to keep Rondell Moore, one of the most electric players in the country, to 4 catches, like 25 total yards or something like that, to contain him as well as they did, we thought, oh, yeah, they're coming back to Fort Worth, going to be home with SMU. They beat them by 30 every year, it seems like. And they'll get that win, and they get Kansas, which you can't take them for granted anymore if you're TCU anyway, but it's a game you should win, and you're looking, you're standing on the barrel of 5-0, 6-0, getting to the heart of Big 12 play. But of course, now it's going off the rails now after playing SMU and really getting handled in every facet of the game, especially on defense, which really surprised everybody. If you're a TCU offense this year, when you have so many questions at quarterback, you're like, cool, we're going to put 38 points. You think you're going to win a lot of games, considering this defense is supposed to be one of the best in the country and one of the best in the Gary Patterson era. But giving up 41 to SMU really stunned. Now, what kind of happened was they lost That number two corner hasn't played all year. He got banged up at the very end of fall camp, like the last practice before the opening game. So he hasn't played all year. He's expected to be back this weekend, but it's still up in the air. So they didn't have the number two corner, and one of the starting safeties got out with some sort of infection after having a small procedure done. So he was expected to play on Saturday against SMU. They didn't realize until Friday he wasn't going to play. So a bunch of backups had to play on defense, and TCU wasn't ready for it. And SMU came out and played a perfect game, and TCU struggled, still had a chance late, but just played really, really poor for the first 3.5 quarters, and it was too much to come back from.
I heard Gary Patterson's press conference yesterday, and he seemed like he alluded to a lot of guys that might be banged up, or several. He didn't go into a lot of detail on all of them. What is the latest on the injury situation?
Yeah, so Julius Lewis, the starting number two corner, we've expected to back, and we expect him back this weekend. He was one of the two players available to us yesterday to talk to, so that's a pretty good sign that he'll be ready to go and get to play on Saturday. Vernon Scott, like I said, is a starting safety. Missed the SMU game, but played well against Purdue. His timetable's totally up in the air. He's the guy that had an infection that you can't really predict. You don't really know how that's going to go. It's different from a strain or pulled muscle or anything like that. Number two receiver, Tay Barber, he's played, I think, two drives in the entire season. Whenever he comes into the game, he gets banged up another way. He's a smaller receiver, but it's a hamstrings or muscle soreness or quads and knees is banged up for him. The guy with the most receiving yards on the season, Trey Heights, hasn't played since the opener. He's banged up as well. And Mikel Barkley's another receiver who we haven't seen much of at all, but he's a guy that Gary Patterson likes an awful lot as a deep threat. He also hasn't played at all this season. So the receiving corps is awfully banged up, and if you look at how TCU's really lost their games and really not played well on offense, they get 5 to 7 drops per game from this receiving corps, which is really kind of super top-heavy with Jalen Reagor as an NFL pick this year. And then after that's a bunch of people that just can't catch the football. So that's pretty much the rundown of all the injuries right now.
Something else from Patterson's press conference when I was watching that yesterday that stood out to me, and I don't know if there's been any reaction or your take on it, and since the game's at TCU this weekend, he made a comment that he saw a lot of red and blue, referring to SMU fans down in the lower levels toward the end of the game or maybe in the second half, and you could tell he wasn't very happy about it.
Yeah, they remodeled this TCU football stadium, M&G Carter. I don't know if you were here 2 years ago, last time Kansas was here, but it's been a totally different – the last 2 years they've built it up, it's almost a totally different ballpark, essentially. It's crazy. On that student section side, they've built it up so much. And they've added a new feature this year. They added beer sales as a way to try and keep people from going, leaving at halftime and coming back for the third or fourth quarter. That way they'd have the energy for the third quarter, the fans would still be here. Now, I get it. It was a 2:30 game, and as I just told you, it's 90 degrees for the next 3 or 4 weeks here. So it's hot, and it's humid, and a little breeze. They've added a little bit more shade to it, but it's just not as well as you like. We saw Alabama complain a couple weeks ago about getting an 11 o'clock game, and boo-hoo, sorry, that's just how the rest of the world lives, Alabama, so deal with it. But it's a shame because the plan was to do this beer sale thing so people wouldn't leave at halftime and stay in their seats the entire game. But the team wasn't playing well, so a bunch of Fairweather fans got up and left at halftime or in the third quarter and didn't stick around for the end of the game. And a bunch of SMU fans, which their student section's kind of in the upper level, made their way down to the lower levels and got to really enjoy the win with their team after the game. So Gary Price wasn't happy about that, but it's not the first time a coach has called out his fan base for not being as supportive as he would like. But it is frustrating. I can see that with a lot more. It wasn't like an SMU home game. It's not like when TCU plays at AT&T Stadium against Ohio State or LSU, and it's 70% Ohio State or LSU fans versus 30% TCU, despite being 15 minutes from TCU's campus. It wasn't like that, but it was still a lot of red and blue that got down to the lower level.
I want to move over to the offense. It looks like all the snaps are going to Max Duggan. And, you know, talk about the offense, talk about what they're doing, and then talk about him playing quarterback, kind of taking over the snaps, and what have you seen from him?
Yeah, so against Purdue, TCU played Alex Delton to start, the grad transfer from Kansas State. He played the first two drives, then Duggan went in for two drives, and Delton went in for a drive or two, and then Duggan got the rest of the snaps for the second half. And then this game, Duggan played all but two snaps in the game. So Duggan pretty much earned the starting job. He's taken the starting job and he's a true freshman. So it's one of the things where he's got to learn and grow and evolve. We saw this with Andy Dalton, I guess going on 10 years ago now. My goodness, I'm old. As a young guy, as a redhead guy, Max Duggan's been labeled like Andy Dalton 2.0, as a guy who can run a little bit better and throw a little bit better than Andy Dalton could when he first got here. And he's got a cannon for an arm, but the thing is, he needs to put a little more touch on his passes. He's broken a couple fingers. That's a slight exaggeration, but he throws the ball really hard to his receiver, and that could be a reason for some of the drops. But it's one of those things where he just has to learn and grow and adapt. And if he's the guy going forward, he's definitely the future. He played, like I said, the entire game against SMU game except for two snaps. So as he grows and learns his offense, it'll get better. But the issue was the first half he was so pedestrian. He was 1 of 10 for 22 yards in the first half. Then the second half he was 15 for 24 for 177 yards and 3 touchdowns or something like that. So he was so much better in the second half. It's about getting that kind of energy early and getting his progress early and going through his progression and reads and getting receivers that catch the football. So the offense is looking better. It's looking more like we expect to look going forward. Again, they put up 38 points. You expect them to win a lot of games like that. But he's the future. The future is now, but he's still young. They're still going to make some mistakes, and we'll see how that goes going forward.
Moving over to the defense, you know, TCU's always been known for the good defense. Gary Patterson's always involved with the game planning and the calling of that. But, you know, they gave up some points to SMU. Just talk about the defense from TCU and what can we expect?
Yeah, SMU is a prolific passing team. They always have been for the last 10, 15 years. But here was Sonny Dykes, who was a former TCU assistant coach, coming over. And he also has 3 former TCU assistants on his staff over there as well. So they basically modeled themselves after the air raid style offense, but with TCU coaches. So the best of both worlds between TCU and Texas Tech, I guess. And they really torched TCU. Shane Bichelle is the grad transfer from UT, so he's done really well this season. He's really surprised me and impressed me so far. But yeah, they shredded this TCU defense, which is supposed to be pretty good. Jeff Gladney didn't have a really good game. He's probably a second or third round draft pick this year. TCU's top corner, Julius Lewis, like I said, didn't play. Vernon Scott didn't play one of the safety spots. And the younger safeties, Keenan Reed, Ardarius Washington, and Keon Stewart all had to play substantial roles in that game. And they're still young. They're still in their first or second year learning, and they just got beat badly. Now, the biggest question has been the defensive line, a spot that we expected TCU to be great in because they're always great. Ross Blacklock returned from his Achilles tear that cost him all of last season. He's looked really good so far, but he's really been the one guy on the defensive line that has looked really good. Oshawn Mathis is a redshirt freshman who looks solid, but he disappears for plays at a time, for chunks at a time. And then the second defensive end, Shanique Blackshear, is a starter. He hasn't really done much at all since coming over from South Carolina. So we haven't seen much of this defense like we expected to see. Garrett Wallace has been amazing. He had 19 tackles in the SMU game, the leading linebacker, but the number 2 linebacker spot is a rotation between sophomores that were safeties till fall camp. So they're still learning the position well. So the defense, it hasn't been as great as we expected. It's still pretty solid, and I expect unless you're gonna throw the ball 50 times a game, or if you're a defense or you're an offense with a really good running quarterback, I think TCU will be able to contain them for the most part.
Well, we'll wrap it up, man, with this one. Give me your take on the game. How do you see this matchup, and how might it play out?
Well, these games are always close for whatever reason. TCU SMU or TCU Kansas is always a really close game. There's just one blowout since TCU moved to the Big 12, and obviously Kansas got the win last year. And this offense is so unpredictable the way they're playing right now. Kansas is playing better, it seems like. The big win against Boston College, I think, is a lasting memory for a lot of people. I think TCU pulls it out, but I think it's another game that's one possession at halftime, and maybe TCU wins something like 24-10 in the fourth quarter when they put it away. But I wouldn't surprise me at all if this is like 10-10 or 13-10 at halftime, just because of how these two teams play each other every year.
Billy, I appreciate you joining us, and also we'll have your Q&A up on the site on Friday for everybody to read, and have a good call on Saturday.
Sounds good. You guys have a good game.
That was Bill Wessels, and it sounds like TCU is trying to find some mojo, some answers of their own with the injuries that they've encountered through the early part of the season, just trying to get things back on track to where they thought they might be before the season started. John, it's time for a breakdown. I mean, when you look at this TCU squad, what do you expect from Gary Patterson and his club? I mean, this is a team that, as we've talked about on the boards and as you've mentioned several times, KU plays TCU tough seemingly every single year. And that was under coaching staffs that I don't think any of us would argue were maybe pale in comparison to the group that Les Miles has put together. When you look at this matchup, what do you see?
Well, Randy, I see a TCU team that probably is going to be pissed off after last week. Okay, I mean, they lost to their crosstown rival. And, you know, they lost to SMU. SMU did some nice things in that game. And I put this on the message board. SMU has flipped their roster about faster than anybody I've ever seen them do it. And they have bought in, I heard it was 18 transfers. I heard there was like 9 or 10 kids that were ruled eligible to play this year that were not grad transfers. I mean, they got some pretty talented kids, and they're in a good spot at SMU because they get a lot of kids who want to go back home that are from Dallas that went away to other schools, and they come back, and SMU is a good landing spot for them. And I heard just some people who coach against them and have seen them on film, they look like a totally different team, and they spread TCU out, and they had some success against them. One other thing that hasn't been talked about a lot in that game, TCU fumbled the ball 6 times. They lost 3 of them. So, you know, one of the hot things that's been a topic this week, the Kansas defense hasn't had a lot of takeaways this year. So this would be the game that, you know, it's going to be 93 degrees down there. I just looked at the weather right before the podcast. I mean, I don't know if Les Miles has him going in the indoor and they shut the doors and crank that heat up to about 90. I don't know how the team's preparing for it, but that's going to be a factor too, the weather. I just think, Randy, just looking back over, and maybe it's the KU guy in me that's covered these games for so many years. You know Gary Patterson's going to have them ready to play, okay?
Yes.
They are after that SMU loss, you could tell he was not happy. You heard the clip where he was talking about the SMU fans. He said there was way too much royal and red down in the stadium. He wasn't happy about that. So I think TCU's going to come out with a purpose. Now, they're banged up, they're young, and Kansas always plays TCU tough. But right now, I mean, listen, you look at a game and you can think with your head and you can think with your heart, okay? And when you think with your heart, I keep saying, hey, Kansas finds a way to stay in this thing. They find a way to, you know, take it into the fourth quarter, only down a score, and that would be the positive thing. But, you know, listen, the line, well, it's 17 in Vegas. I just think that TCU is going to come out and play. I think Kansas is going to go down there, and Kansas is riding this weird roller coaster of things. I mean, they go out and they play Indiana State, and they find a way to come back and beat a team that they're clearly much more talented than. They turn back around, they go play Coastal Carolina, they lose. All right, everybody's hanging their heads. The fan base is saying, oh my gosh, what's going on here? And then they go out to Boston College and just hammer Boston College, okay? You know, sandwiched in there going roller coaster. You know, there's a lot of peaks and valleys. Well, then they go out and they lose this tough game at home to start the Big 12 last week against West Virginia. So there's also a concern how Kansas will respond. I think Les Miles is a great motivator. I think those kids play hard for him. And what your hope is they go down to TCU and play with the same effort that they did coming off the Coastal Carolina loss at Boston College. But right now, I got to go with my head. And my head says TCU 27, Kansas 20.
You know, I think there are going to be... It's not many more points. I look at it going a little bit higher than that. I think KU comes up short on this one as well. I think it's difficult situation for them going into a TCU game where they're stung after falling to a school that maybe looks at them as a rival, but they don't necessarily think of as one, being a Big 12 program now. I think TCU takes this one 35-27. With the Jayhawks picking up a couple field goals to make it a little bit closer. I wouldn't rule anything out just because the history of this game, like we talk about the fact that it seems like every year something completely unexpected. Something crazy happens between these two programs. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to do what they did against Boston College, which was maybe one of the most unexpected results I can ever remember in a college football game. But this is the same squad that did that. And I know you're talking about a different dynamic. You're talking about a Boston College squad that you and I have both said was very slow, big and physical, but they were some plodders compared to a TCU squad that is young and has a lot of athleticism. Anything could happen, but I think in this one, I think KU falls short. Like I said, 35-27. That will do it for a wide-ranging edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. Be sure, take the time to go. If you're a listener, we appreciate all the downloads that we get. But if you are not a subscriber to Jayhawk Slant, you are, I don't even know if it's fair to say, they're getting half the story, Kirby. Go subscribe to Jayhawk Slant right now to get all the information on what is going on with the men's basketball program, the latest on situation behind the scenes, talk about recruiting, what's going on the recruiting trails as Coach Self and in the KU Athletics Department armors up for what could be a battle with the NCAA. At the same time, get all the latest information from Les Miles and a staff that is recruiting relentlessly as they continue to make progress on the football field. It's a great time to be a Kansas fan, even better time to be a Jayhawk Slant subscriber. From a man, John Kirby, for our basketball expert, Shea Wildebor, I'm Randy Withers. We will talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.